To call our meeting to order on this December 5th of 2023. I hope everybody had a wonderful Thanksgiving. We've got a robust agenda today. So making sure everybody got the packet, the first item requiring approval is approving the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
A motion.
I'll second.
Great. Any debate or friendly amendments? See none. All those in favor of approving the minutes say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Josh.
Aye, John.
The minutes are approved. We've got a loan portfolio to approve, which is the next item on our agenda. There are four loans at around $3.8 million. I move to approve the loans for today.
I will second.
Thank you, John. Then I will, Rich, turn it over to you to talk about the loans that we are looking at.
Thanks, Sarah. Loan number one is a broadband project loan to the town of Egg Harbor in Door County. We've had a few of these, and there is one more in the pipeline that should be coming, you know, at the next board meeting or the one following. Loan number two is to the city of Rhinelander to finance some TID infrastructure costs. This is a project including the Holiday Inn Express and the road and utilities to TID number 12. Loan number three is a greater purchase for the Village of Oliver, and loan number four is a land purchase so that the Village of Woodville can expand their industrial park. Are there any questions?
Rich, my only question maybe that would be helpful to point out to the board is the Rhinelander rate is different even though the terms are the same. So maybe just explaining when the rates change and how that all works.
Right. There was a short period of time. I think it was 3 days in late September where the rate for our loans was increased to 6% by the investment committee. And then again, because of volatility in the interest rate market, we're increased to 6.25% a few days later. Rhinelander was able to get their application in, application request form in within that 3 day period, and so they got a little bit lower rate.
Thank you, Rich. Any other questions from the commissioners? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the loan portfolio today say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Josh.
Aye, John.
The loans are approved. There is no old business, and we have a few items under new business today. The first item is discussing a submerged land lease for the city of Superior. So if there is no objection from the commissioners, I move that we suspend the rules so Tom can walk us through the proposed submerged land lease that we are looking at. Are there any objections? All right. Seeing none, Tom, I'm going to turn the floor over to you to walk us through this land lease, submerged land lease.
Thanks, Sarah. So we all know that BCPL's primary responsibility is to manage four trust funds for the benefit of public education. But we have some additional ancillary responsibilities, and one of them is to act as the leasing agent for the state when it comes to lake beds and river beds. The state constitution provides that the waters of Wisconsin shall be forever free, and so there are limitations on the ability to fill lake beds and river beds and to place any infrastructure on them. And some of the ones that our board has dealt with so far generally have to do with putting infrastructure there. This is a situation where it is strictly fill. The city of Superior is concerned that Wisconsin Point, a very thin spit of sand extending out into Lake Superior, is being washed away. by the storms that are coming across Lake Superior. And so they were seeking the ability to reinforce that spit of sand by placing some fill on the bed of Lake Superior that, in essence, would protect Wisconsin Point. But in order to do that, they need, in essence, regulatory approval from the DNR that the proposed physical changes are consistent with the public interest in the navigable waters of Lake Superior. And then they need a lease from BCPL in order to do that. In essence, leasing the area of the bed of Lake Superior on which that additional fill would be placed. That brings us to today. The Department of Natural Resources has issued those findings. From a regulatory standpoint, they are fine with it. And because of the fact that this is a situation where the city of Superior is not seeking a lease in order to produce revenue, but in essence to protect an area that would be a recreational area for the citizens, BCPL staff have examined it and believe that it's appropriate for leasing, and it's also appropriate to do it at a nominal amount. We can lease for up to 50 years pursuant to the statutes, but DNR's findings were only extended 25 years, and so we are proposing a lease that would be dovetailing with the DNR findings as well. So we are proposing a lease to the City of Superior for up to 25 years for a nominal rate of $200 per year and for a purpose of navigational improvements and recreation related to navigation. I tried to write this board item memo in a way that would make sense to people that never have to deal with these issues. And I hope I was able to get that through. And again, thanks to our staff here for helping produce that document, because it went through numerous drafts to get to this point.
Well, thank you, Tom. And I will tell you, it was very easy to read and understand. So appreciate all the work that went into make this easy to consume.
thank you. Everybody.
I was trying to think of when's the last time we did something similar to this, and nothing came to mind. So one of the unique, to your point, ancillary responsibilities that pops up every once in a while. Any questions from the commissioners?
None for me.
I'm good too.
Okay. So I'm going to then, somebody want to make a motion?
Are we motioning to approve the lease or?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean.
Okay. All right. I will make that motion to authorize the submerged land lease.
Second.
Any other discussion, debate? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the proposed submerged land lease as captured in our packet, say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Josh.
Aye, John.
Okay. Submerged land lease is approved. Moving on to the next item under new business, it is the rebalancing of the U.S. Forest Service exchange lands. This yet is another complicated and exciting development that took many years, but if there is no objection again by the commissioners, I'd like to suspend the rules for Tom to walk us through this item that needs approval as well, based on just the unique structure and way that land bank works and everything else. So are there any objections from the commissioners?
Nope.
All right, Tom, turning it back over to you to talk us through the rebalancing act that is happening.
Thank you. And again, a very unusual situation. in my time here, we have never done an exchange as big as the one we did with the Forest Service. And because of the fact that when we started the exchange, we weren't sure exactly how the different pieces were going to appraise out. And so we started out with base holdings of land that were intended to go in either direction. But then we also had some additional parcels that may be thrown into the deal to, in essence, balance out the value in case one end came out higher or lower. And that's kind of what happened here, is that we had identified a bunch of different parcels that were going to be definitely included and some other ones that would be value-added parcels that, in essence, would balance it out. When we got to the finish line, it turned out that, yes, a couple of the common school fund parcels were included, but we weren't able to... at the time that we closed, because all of a sudden the Forest Service sped things up at the end, we weren't able to identify, well, which of the parcels that are coming from the Forest Service should be allocated to the Common School Fund. And so this was important for us to get this right because of the fact that we're trustees for both of those trust funds, and we shouldn't be taking actions that benefit one at the expense of the other. And so we wanted to make sure that we got this right. And so we went back and we hired the appraiser who did the full-scale appraisal, but this time with a very limited focus. We were looking at, okay, we just want the value of the common school fund lands that were going to the Forest Service. And then we're looking at identifying parcels that are coming from the Forest Service to BCPL, but would make the most sense to allocate to the common school fund. And we want to make sure that we had the value right. But we added another criteria. We looked at proximity, because if we were just going to randomly pick a parcel here or there, well, then that creates problems in the future as you're doing timber sales in terms of making sure that you're allocating the right amount of revenue to each of the trust funds. And so we thought if we were able to find parcels that were contiguous with current common school trust lands, it would make things easier. And so Mr. Steigerwald, I thought, did a great job of valuing the common school fund lands and also looking at very carefully some of the lands that we were looking at that were contiguous. And as it turns out, his valuation came in spot on between them. So by identifying five parcels that were contiguous to current common school trust lands, we were able to hit both of those criteria, not only make sure that the values were correct, but also because they were contiguous, they would be easier to manage for the common school. So we hit both of our criteria. So what we're asking the board to do then is to allocate those five parcels as a common school trust lands, and the remainder, everything else that came in that U.S. Forest Service exchange, be normal school lands. And again, tried our best to develop a narrative that made sense with the materials we had, so that, again, it would be transparent to the rest of the world reading through this. Are there any questions?
Tom, I just have two questions. When was the land exchange completed?
Oh, I know it was at least 6 months ago, so it's been a while. But I don't have the exact date on when it was completed. There have been no timber sales on any of these properties since then. So there's been no revenue generating activity on that.
But it was done it was completed in 2023. I know it started well before that, knowing how complicated this transaction was, but it was completed in 2023.
Yep.
And then is there just out of curiosity, it looks like Mr. Steingartner used 2020 for numbers for evaluation. Was there just a reason why that year was picked?
Yes, I believe that was the year that his appraisal was finalized for the Forest Service. So he had started work on it significantly earlier than that. But the Forest Service has all kinds of additional requirements for appraisals to meet their, in quotes, yellow book standards. And so that's why he was taking it back to that particular time.
Thank you, Tom. John and Josh, any questions about this exchange?
None for me.
So just to make sure everyone understands, Tom, the land's already owned by the BCL. This just allocates it to which fund?
Yes, that is absolutely correct.
There's no land being purchased.
Land being purchased. It's just making sure that on our end, our record keeping is proper and that we are allocating it properly between the two funds.
Thanks.
Any other questions for Tom? And as we kind of talked about last meeting, maybe the land bank authority could be a educational topic, Tom, for a meeting in the future or for even like an offline session, since that is something that is complicated yet important to what the BCPL is managing and working through every day.
I'd be happy to do that.
Any other questions? Seeing none, is there someone who wants to call the question or the motion?
What's the formal phrasing we need to use on this one?
I think the best thing to do would be to propose a motion along in accordance with the prepared board materials.
We need to say regarding.
The main thing is that what the board is doing is that they're allocating the five parcels that we've identified to the Common School Fund as Common School Trust lands, and all the other lands received in the Forest Service exchange are allocated to the Normal School Fund as Normal School Trust lands. If you don't have the materials in front of you, would you want me to read them?
I'm happy, Tom. I move that the board approves the resolution is captured in our packet to accept the appraisal and supplemental from Mr. Steinwartner and the proposed Common School Fund allocations. I think is what
I second, right? And I tip my cap to Sarah for her handling of that.
Any other further debate? See none. All those in favor of approving the rebalancing of the U.S. Forest Service proposal as captured in our packet, say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Josh.
Aye, John.
Motion's approved. I think, Tom, that maybe goes in the BCPL history for the most complicated, one of the most complicated motions, but went relatively seamlessly. So thanks to everybody for their support, questions, and participation.
We were approached by the Forest Service about whether we would consider another exchange at some point. And I said, be happy to look at selling some lands, but as far as an exchange, that may have to be sometime further in the future. So,
well, I do want to just take this time too to thank the team, because when you think about it, knowing that over 3,000 acres were exchanged with the U.S. Forest Service that can help us with the continuity and kind of contiguousness of our forests, but also how that can help with revenue and how that can help allow us to be more efficient and effective from a management perspective is a great accomplishment. So it's exciting that that has been done and made official, and we're wrapping up the books and kind of can move forward. So the next new business item is highlighting potential statutory changes. And this was brought up at our last board meeting. And kind of the overall takeaway was there's a lot that can be discussed. And so we might want to be thinking through this from kind of a taking bite-sized pieces along the way, knowing that there's a lot of different factors that go into statutory changes. It's, of course, the relationship with the legislature. It's also involving the governor, and making sure that folks know the role that the BCPL plays and the overall effectiveness. And so, Tom, I'm going to turn it over to you, because I think something that was mentioned that we talked about was everything from looking at our revenue streams, like fines and forfeitures, to potentially unclaimed property, and educating the board too on how money flows through to make sure we can have the best distributions possible year after year, whether it's from the common school fund or from the normal school fund.
Thanks, Sarah. You know, as the board pointed out at our last meeting, significant increases in library aid were made possible by a statutory change that increased the investment authority of the board from a small sector of the fixed income world all the way to prudent investor authority, which includes all sectors of the investment world, as long as the investment choice is prudent. We had been locked into a small corner of that fixed income world for over a century and a half. That change in authority was huge. The challenge then became implementing that investment authority without additional resources. And in fact, implementing that authority with fewer resources. And our recent announcement of record earnings distribution shows that we've succeeded in that challenge. We have literally done more with less. And along those veins, the Attorney General asked, well, are there other statutory changes that may allow BCPL to become even more productive? And the short answer is yes, but there are limitations if we do not receive additional resources to be able to implement some of those things. Our legal structure is a little bit unusual. Board of Commissioners of Public Lands and three of the trust funds we manage were created in the original draft of the Wisconsin Constitution. Chapter 24 of the Wisconsin Statutes provides the statutory framework for how we do things. It has two subchapters, public lands administration and trust funds. We have zero regulations. This is probably the most unusual legal framework for any state agency. Most of our statutes have been in place for over 100 years, and some could use some modifications to bring them into the modern age. Oftentimes, the modernization of those agency statutes are developed from a ledge council study committee. However, in my 18 years here, there's only been one study committee in 2018. That study committee took up an inordinate amount of agency staff time responding to numerous inquiries, and the focus of that committee seemed to be on undermining and eviscerating the agency. As a result, the agency didn't ask for any statutory changes at that time. But meanwhile, We have managed to modernize and reshape our agency processes and produced record trust fund earnings and record timber sale revenue. It's possible to squeeze some additional proficiency out, but like I said, we're going to need additional resources. So, well, we could ask for a wholesale modernization of statutes, but that would likely draw another Ledge Council study committee. I'm not sure we want to do that, but that's not my choice. That's up to our board. Or we, as Sarah mentioned, we could seek tactical changes to individual statutes. One of the ones I brought up last time was modifying statutes to provide individual trust income accounts for each of the four trust funds managed by BCPL. It's crazy to think about how we're currently set up. We manage four separate trust funds. In the statutes, there is identified a common school income fund, but it's not really a common school income fund. It's technically a custodial slash clearing account that holds all the earnings of all four trust funds. And in fact, as certain transactions are clearing, it may even hold principal of some of the other trust funds. It would make more sense to actually establish four separate income accounts, one for each of the trust funds, so that throughout the course of the year, the income from each of those trust funds is allocated into those income accounts. As trust fund managers, you really want to try to limit commingling. And what you have right now is a situation where, by law, we end up commingling. It's not that it's a horrible thing. It's just that it's something that you try to keep to a minimum. In fact, for our normal school fund, it gets even a little bit more complicated because of the fact that the UW has the power to just reach into the normal school fund to take money out during the course of the year to provide the funding for the scholarships and programs that they are funding on their end with the money. So at a minimum, that may be a non-controversial statutory change that would just make things a little bit easier to track on our end and show that we really desire to move into the 21st century. But there are quite a few other possibilities that we can do as well. For the better part of, I believe, four decades, BCPL had been funded with program revenue, in essence, the earnings of our funds paid for agency expenses. And then during that study committee, they said, well, it seems to us that you should be funded with taxpayer revenue. And that way we can keep a closer handle on your expenses, which is exactly what happened. We got switched over to GPR, and then our budgets were cut. The fact is, our earnings have jumped so much that if we returned to program revenue funding, there would be no noticeable difference to the beneficiaries in that situation. Again, that may be possible in light of the fact that the arguing that it's costing the taxpayers less, and yet our efficiency is not being eroded in any way, shape, or form. There are some other things that we could do as well. As Sarah had pointed out, it's possible that we may take a closer look at modernizing the or adapting the unclaimed property statutes a little bit more closely to our situation. The idea that the unclaimed property sits in the general fund until a certain point in time when they decide that, well, we don't need all of it. And at that point, some of it is transferred over to the common school fund. It may make more sense to sit in the common school fund until actually claims are produced for those funds. We it may make sense to modernize some of the land sale statutes. Again, these are 100 years old, including a modification or repeal of Section 2411 sub 3. This is not something you hear me talk about much, but it's a statute that's been around since 1909 that, in essence, reserves mineral rights and water power rights and access rights on sales of public land. Well, again, that's something that can create some limitations or hurdles when you're trying to sell land. Is the buyer willing to live with you retaining those reservations on the land that they're purchasing? In some cases, the answer is no. They do not want to buy that land. Rich and I have talked from time to time about the possibility of selling trust fund loans. And in fact, in our investment policy, we talk about that. The statutes were allowing for that were drafted more than 30 years ago, I believe. And while at that time, they provided a pretty clear path, the finance world has changed a bit more, such that there may be ways of selling it that are not necessarily authorized by that particular statute. So perhaps seeking a modification or clarification on that would be helpful. Our statutes right now are a little bit of a mismatch in that we are funded with GPR, with taxpayer revenue, but there's also statutes that say, well, that our gross revenue does not include expenses associated with managing the lands. Okay. But if you don't have an appropriation to spend from those, how do you do that? So again, it's a point of clarification. So one of the things that I'm seeking from the board is, as we queue these different points up, how would you best like me to present them to the board? Do you want me to bring an agency bullet point request on the statutory changes we'd like to see, or would you like it brought up more as a generalized point for discussion? Sarah, I think you're still on mute.
I am. Thank you, Tom. I think it's really helpful to just lay out the various possibilities. And I would say, from my perspective, I think there's two things that would be helpful in knowing that an underlining theme is education that's needed to know kind of why these changes are being made or kind of thinking through, but also at the same time, looking at with these statutory changes and possibilities, what's, you know, to say this in a very kind of layman way, is the juice worth the squeeze? Knowing that the agency is already pretty strapped and knowing that there is a lot of things that are needed to push through legislative changes, and the legislative changes that we as a board want to push forward, I want to make sure we are all committed to helping that happen. Because it's not just staff and staff time, but it's commissioners and going and meeting and making sure that everyone is rowing in the same direction. So I do think that as we look at these opportunities and are evaluating them, we think about it from this kind of what's really achievable and worth the time and resources required to make that happen. I think that would be helpful, though, even as we are kind of potentially exploring these opportunities, is something that you mentioned, Tom, I believe, and it was captured in the minutes, was this memo that talks about how money runs through the board, like to the agency, and kind of further explaining that, because I do think having that additional supplemental information is grounding in a way that's helpful as we think about these additional statutory opportunities. So I do think that would be something that I think about as before even we get into some of these opportunities, but having that information and having a discussion around it, because it also then helps put these opportunities that you've listed in thinking through what's really possible and also worth the investment of time, money, and resources to do it.
I am happy to provide that memo to the board. I am gonna give you the caveat that it will be unlike the two board items that we provided today that were rewritten into layman's English for anybody to understand, because that memo really digs into the weeds in terms of describing how the pieces fit together here over this tumultuous period of time. But ultimately, it's important to understand how those, what we have here and how those pieces fit together, because it, I came to state service from the private sector. I had managed several companies and several organizations. I had never seen anything like this. It was mind-boggling. And again, I'm thankful to Denise for putting up with me, because I kept asking questions like, how can this be? This doesn't make any sense. So, but I'm happy to provide that to the board, and perhaps that's the first step on our journey to going through this. We do have a very limited window for this upcoming legislative session.
Yeah.
The fact
so,
is,
Tom, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm certainly happy to get a memo, though, you know, another option, which is not necessarily an alternative, though, could be, is if there's a, you know, 10-minute sort of summary or something like that that you could give at our next meeting. I'm certainly happy to do it that way, too. Whatever you all think is most efficient is fine with me. In terms of the legislative options, I'll just mention it. My sense is that, there's probably most likely one, and, you know, maybe in an ideal world, two things we might be able to try to get accomplished legislatively. And so it seemed to me like there were both a few what I would call sort of substantive changes in the options you laid out, and then there were a series of more technical changes that don't meaningfully change the way that the authority of BCPL or things like that, but that just allow you to operate more efficiently. So the multiple different accounts was an example of that, I think. And it seems to me like if we're going to go the route of proposing technical changes, I would probably do sort of a package of them. And that would be sort of one option. And then, you know, our other option could be whatever the substantive changes might be. So I don't know if that can boil it down into, you know, three or so options for us to look at and discuss. But I think, you know, if we had sort of a limited option set that you all think is sort of the best, and I think you can group the technical changes into one, that might be how I'd want to think about it. But, you know, there are three of us. So Sarah and John, if you have other thoughts about how to organize that, that's just my take.
Yeah, I mean, I do think at whether it's the next meeting or at a soon future meeting, the memo and then having a conversation about it under new business is critical. I also think that part of the reality is that even technical changes can be a lot more work than I think, you know, than what individuals realize. And I'll just even use, for example, as something as simple as taking one account and making it into four, we have seen how that has become like a big debate and a heavy lift, even though financially the recommendation makes sense and accountants and best practices would agree. it seems very simple and one would say it's technical, but it has to go through a much thorough process. So I do just want us to, you know, be realistic. What seems to be maybe like dotting an I and crossing a T is a bit more complicated. And there is just a lot more work that can be involved to make these things happen. And so I think part of what the conversation has to be is from these opportunities, you know, what can be maybe a quick win potentially, or what could be considered quick wins, based on, you know, what the BCPL thinks are opportunities might be, another way of looking at this holistically, knowing that, I would love for unclaimed property to first come to us so we can get the interest. And I think that's a good thing to be fighting for, versus like, you know, something else.
With respect to the first item that I brought up, the creating the separate income accounts, I think if we're going to seek that statutory change, I need to have the state controller's office on board with that. If it's a joint request from BCPL and the state controller's office, the likelihood of success, I think, would be significantly higher. And so with the board's acquiescence, I'm going to reach out to the controller's office and ask their opinion on supporting that. I'm hopeful that they would. I don't see a reason why they wouldn't, but I think that's probably the first step that needs to happen there.
I'd just say, even if we can't get something through in this legislative cycle, which is ending pretty quickly, it's worth it to still get something drafted and maybe hearing and just have it ready to go for the next session and 25. So, I mean, even if, you know, we can't get it through now, that's not a loss. It's still getting it prepared and ready to go. So, I mean, anything we do, I think that can help is moving in the right direction. So I wouldn't discourage anyone just because they announced an end date and we can't get it passed by then. So.
So I think, Tom, what I'm hearing is a few things. One is, let's make sure we've got the memo background. Let's talk about it in an upcoming meeting. Let's put together, if the BCPL can put together a list of what they think some legislative proposals are, and then discussing about those, what are kind of some quick wins versus maybe some things that are a bit more aspirational. And kind of from that point, we can kind of decide what makes sense going forward. I think to John's point, knowing that this is not just a legislative plan for 2024, we can think about a legislative plan beyond that. But having some of the core building blocks to kind of put that plan together at our next meeting, I think would be very helpful.
Want to make sure I have this straight on my end. So for the next meeting, you'd like a copy of that memo. And if I can have it in more layman's English, so much the better. But perhaps identified several technical changes that could be put together as a package. And I think I can do that as well. Are we looking at technical changes that are what we perceive to be completely non-controversial, or are we, I'm asking how far you want me to go on that? Because
I think honestly, Tom, you put together an entire list. I think it's technical changes. I think it's, and then in our discussion, whether it's at the next board meeting or the following board meeting, let's go through like what we think are non-controversial, what are technical but could be controversial, and even I think what are some legislative changes that might be a bit more aspirational but worth bringing on the table, and thinking about when is the best time to also introduce those, because I think that we've got to, we shouldn't just, I think, corner ourselves to crossing T's and dotting I's. Like, let's think about what's in the best interest of the agency. So to me, I think it would be holistic and kind of walking through. So from that menu, we can kind of pick what makes the most amount of sense for 2024. But knowing we could go back to the menu for 2025 or 2026.
Got it. Okay.
Anything else from the commissioners for at least that, like thinking through that plan?
I just like to say, I wouldn't mind a technical memo, but I'm fine to read either way. If you want to make it understandable to everyone, Tom, that's fine by me. But
I think, Tom, maybe John, like, I will be honest, I learn best by reading. So whatever you want to give me, that's great. I will read it. It will be very helpful.
I'm the same way, Sarah. I'm just saying, hey, whatever you come up with, it's fine. You don't need to make it too general. I don't mind having a little bit of technical stuff in there. I kind of like clarification on some things too. So
we'll do.
And I guess as having three lawyers on this call right now, being like, just think about that too, as the one non-legal person.
So there's a non-lawyer on this call that I actually have to give some credit to as well. Chuck Failing is our IT specialist. Chuck was preceded by Mike Kruger, and Mike and I had started working together earlier on my actually writing some of this stuff down and creating an institutional memory and pathway for the agency on these things. And as Chuck came in, he picked up the mantle from Mike and kept prodding me, you need to reduce this to writing. And so that's really where this memo came from. So thank you, Chuck.
Thank you, Chuck.
Sure thing. Glad I could help.
Any other further discussion about the statutory opportunities? Tom, any other clarification on your end?
I think I've got enough for today. Thank you very much.
Well, it's been a good discussion. So we will wrap up with our routine business. And I know, Rich, you've been patiently waiting for the last 50 minutes for your financial report. So I want to turn it over to you. Do you have anything else to add for your chief investment officer's report?
You know, Sarah, I do have a short report today, and I'll try to keep it as brief as I can. You know, as you know, the investment policy provides the investment committee with the authority to make private fund commitments. And I thought that it might be appropriate to give the board some background on some recent decisions that we made. The investment committee approved commitments within the private debt asset class to two additional funds, following the receipt and approval of third-party due diligence reports that were prepared by Marquette Associates. These commitments are expected to help us meet three goals: increase our investment in the private debt asset class to close in on target allocations for both the Common School Fund and the Normal School Fund, diversify our current private debt portfolios, and generate significant distributable income for trust fund beneficiaries for many years to come. The commitments approved by the investment committee include $25 million from the Common School Fund and $2.5 million from the Normal School Fund to the Angelo Gordon Evergreen Fund, which is expected to close later this month. Angelo Gordon focuses on loans to the lower middle market, which includes firms with less than $25 million of annual earnings. Lending to this sector remains a less efficient part of the direct lending market and offers an attractive risk-return trade-off. With their zero-loss mentality, the Angelo Gordon team has achieved extremely low annual losses, very close to 0%, with annual returns ranging from 9.5% to nearly 14% over the last 10 years. The remaining commitments made by the investment committee include $25 million from the Common School Fund, and again, $2.5 million from the Normal School Fund to Golub Capital Partners 15. This commitment is expected to close in April of next year. Golub started in 2004, focusing on middle market lending to somewhat larger firms than Angelo Gordon, but also seeking a high level of current income and attractive risk-adjusted returns. Golub has been a top three middle market lender for the past 10 years with over 825 employees, mostly concentrated in Chicago and New York. This investment will offer immediate diversification, with the first capital call buying into an existing portfolio of more than 600 credits that is well diversified by borrower, industry, sponsor, and vintage. The underlying investments are primarily senior secured floating rate loans, directly originated by Golub and Angelo Gordon, and have provided consistent returns for Golub in the 10 to 12% range for nearly 20 years. Both Marquette Associates and the investment committee were impressed by each of these firms, and we believe these investments will become a core part of the Common School Fund and Normal School Fund portfolio for many years. As you know, private debt investments offer greater distributable returns than many other asset classes, but that expectation comes with a higher risk level. Diversification is the primary key to offset this risk, but these two firms also have demonstrated an outstanding underwriting process with minimal credit losses through difficult economic environments. These commitment levels are consistent with the goals for both the Common School Fund and the Normal School Fund, and will help us reach our approved target allocations, diversify our portfolios, and improve future distributable income. Tom or Syria, do you have anything to add to that overview? Then that's all I have for today. Would any board members have questions for me today?
I think, Rich, maybe thank you for that update. And I think it's really important because something that we've seen firsthand is how important prudent investor standard has been for the Common School Fund and Normal School Fund, but further, the implementation of that is also critical. It's not just giving you the authority, it's how the authority is actually executed, because that is really is how we get there. And so maybe something that you could highlight, I know we have an end of the year investment report, and we usually do that in February, but maybe what might be helpful in part of that is even just how much we've diversified this past year alone, because every time a decision is made to diversify, that's a lot of due diligence on your end as the chief investment officer and the investment committee, but also by a third party due diligence report. So I think it might just be helpful too to kind of share with the board, looking backwards at 2023.
Yeah. Be my pleasure, Sarah. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Rich. That was a very concise and helpful report. Any other questions for the Chief Investment Officer? Seeing none, we're going to move back over to you, Tom, and your Executive Secretary's report.
I don't have anything further for today. Thank you for your patience with me, Phil.
Thank you, Tom. And I don't have anything to any other update, but I do think today's board meeting was really helpful. And I think when we can bring new board items and have these conversations, it's helpful in making sure we are doing the best we can to work towards the mission for the BCPL. So I thought today's discussion was really positive, and appreciate everyone's participation and support along the way. And so in that vein, I think we've got a few things that we know for upcoming board agenda items. Anything else we would like to add to that list. Okay. See none, I move to adjourn. Is there a second?
I second.
Any debate, discussion? See none. All those in favor of adjourning today's meeting today, say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Josh.
Aye, John.
Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it.
Have a good week, everyone.
Bye, guys. Bye.